Blog Talk Radio.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
Bullshit.
He took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States of America. By some, he's been called controversial.
How can I convince you when your ears refuse to hear?
Now, keep in mind that some of my guests have been approached by Homeland Security or FBI saying, why are you going on the Clay Douglas show?
My message to those guys, if they're listening this morning, is good morning. Go get a cup of coffee. Maybe you'll learn something.
Yeah, sit down. I've always invited you. I hope you come into my lecture, man. Now, you know, we both took the same oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I don't recall there being an expiration date on that.
He is the free American, Clay Douglas.
How can I contain this anguish and this pain?
Catch the Free American weekday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. For the podcast and more details, go to freeamerican.com.
Every time I think about the damage that's been done, the anger wells inside me till I'm almost overcome.
All right. Well, now we're trying it again here. And meanwhile, I'm kicking everybody out of the chat room here that I don't know. And all of you ignorant son of a bitches here trying to call in. I'm running it again. I'm running the show now. And all of you pretenders and all of you fucking trolls, you can all go to hell and you're not coming in here. You had control of it for a little while, but you don't have control of it now. And all of you pretenders there listening in the chat room, maybe I'll let you stay, maybe I won't. Maybe I won't. Now let's talk about the fourth turning with Jay Widener. Buzzsaw from Sean Stone. Go ahead, Bud.
And by 33rd degree Freemasons, who took a liking to me for some reason. I could never take the books home, but I could read them in their libraries. And I was maybe in my early 20s at this point, and I started reading a lot of very interesting books. And I began realizing that, in fact, conspiracy is the way of life and political landscape. And they don't want you to know that, so they make sure that anybody who talks about conspiracies are labeled a theorist or a whack job or something.
So what would be some of the most mind-blowing conspiracies that you've ever encountered? Things that maybe even make you say, I don't know if I can believe that, but it's quite possible.
I think the culminating moment for me was when I read a book, a very obscure book called Was Jonestown a CIA Medical Experiment by a Oxford professor of religion. And it was a very intense read, about 300 pages. And I got so terrified at the end of the book that I wrapped myself in a blanket and crawled under my bed. And I truly believe that it was a CIA medical experiment. Now I firmly believe it. And that was probably the most terrifying book I've probably ever read.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but obviously, given that was in the 70s, and here we are today with almost on a daily basis, just, you know, do you think that what we're seeing when it comes to all these mass shootings and a lot of the media sort of storms around events, do they indicate sort of mass psychological operations being done against the American people?
I would say definitely. I would say that I would find almost every mass shooting event of the last 5 years to be very suspect, very suspect. And the more that you look into these things and the more you try to get details, the less you get details, and then you get details that contradict the storyline. So I'm very suspicious of almost every event that I'm hearing about. I believe that, in fact, it is CNN and MSNBC and Fox that are the fake news. And we're the real news.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
So you've written about this concept of the fourth turning in American history, that basically every 70 to 80 years there is this sort of massive transformative event, going back to the American Revolution, then the Civil War, World War II, and the idea is that each time, each of these events is essentially reflecting on the sins and the crimes that were left incomplete of the past, the things that were attempted but never resolved. So what would that leave us if we are now approaching the fourth turning?
Well, we are approaching the fourth turning, and I would point out that Steve Bannon, Trump's top advisor, has written extensively about the fourth turning, so he's very aware of this. The fourth turning, of course, is a book by Howe and Strauss about American history. I highly recommend that everyone read it. And from 1776 was the first turning, 1860 was the second turning, 1940 to 45 was the third turning, and now we're approaching the fourth turning, which will be done by 2025 or so. And basically, so in the first turning, in order to keep the Union together, the southern states were going to bolt if we outlawed slavery. And Jefferson and Washington, believe it or not, actually tried to do it, but they couldn't. They realized that they had to hold the Union together because the British were so adamant about getting their country back. And so that sin of slavery was left to fester until Lincoln decided to solve the problem in the 1860s, which was the second turning. And what's interesting is on the third turning, which was 1940 to 45 or so, the most popular movie of the third turning until Jaws, actually, was Gone with the Wind, which was a reflection of how great the antebellum South was. And, you know, when you watch Gone with the Wind today with our eyes, it's almost like a freakish experience. It isn't even a good movie. It's like, who are these people, right? And so we're so alienated from even the people that were in the third turning now that we're approaching the fourth turning, and this country will be completely different. Just like at the end of World War II, we were a completely different country than when we started World War II. We will be a completely different country in 8 years or so.
Are you saying that we basically have to deal with the sins of slavery, the ghosts,
yes,
and also the Native American experience here? I mean, the fact of a lot of genocide, a lot of trauma that has occurred, you're saying these are going to be addressed in this turning.
That's exactly right. You're seeing the movies again, 12 Years as a Slave, Django Unchained. Birth of a Nation. You're seeing her return back to reflecting on the Civil War and the sins of the Civil War and pre-Civil War and the antebellum South. And Black Lives Matter rising up at this time and all that. That's not an accident. That's a reflection of the turning. And we have to deal with these things, and it's just something that we have to deal with. And we can't run or shirk our responsibilities. The fourth turning is here, and it's going to be the biggest of all the turns.
So, you know, some people look at this as we're living in an end times situation, right? And I mean, I guess you could argue that if you lived through World War One or World War Two, you'd have thought that was the end of the world, right? But we have the trumpet. Trump is trumpet, maybe,
Trump,
the revelations.
Right.
There are certain, you know, conflicts and issues of traumatic global climate change. That's more of a world event, a natural occurring world event than anything. So, what do you think we should be looking for in these, you know, let's say if we are living through end times, what should we be looking for, and what dangers and risks are we facing?
Well, I don't think we're living through end times, first off. I don't think everybody thinks they're living through the end times, and frankly, it gets tiring after a while. But we do have big problems, the acidification of the oceans. We got serious problems. There's a pile of plastic in the Pacific, the size of Texas, that has to be dealt with. And what we were talking about with the Native Americans and our African American populations, we have to rectify those sins, and we're going to have to do it in a positive way. And I think with African Americans, I think we really need to get in and tackle the education system that they're under. And I think all of these things are going to go away, by the way. I don't think that we're going to be paying $200,000 to go to college anymore. I think you're going to get an MIT education online. That's going to be free. I think that Congress is no longer going to go to Washington. They're going to meet on the internet. There's no reason for them to all go to Washington. Stay home, get away from the slime and the slop there and the lobbyists, and stay with your constituents and your family. And you meet on the internet. We don't need to do any of that. And I think we're doing a whole rethink right now of everything we're doing, and I think that's a really good thing. And you know, we're going to go more locally. We're going to get our food more locally. We're going to make sure that our water supplies are clean. But we're also going to be global. So we're going to have electronic global culture with an intrinsic local culture. It's going to be very interesting. And I think the world that we're coming to, I'm very optimistic, actually. People are very pessimistic around me, but I'm not. I think actually things are better now than they've ever been. There's fewer wars. I know that sounds hard to believe. There's fewer wars going on right now than ever. You have education, at your fingertips, which is unbelievable. When I was young, I had to go to libraries, I had to look up stuff, I had to figure it all out for myself, and now I've got everything right at my fingertip on the internet. And I think that we're becoming more aware. We're becoming aware of what's in our food, we're becoming aware of what the corporations are doing to us, we're becoming aware of what Monsanto is up to, and I think those things are going to go away. That's the revolution. It's a revolution between consciousness and unawareness.
Right. It's almost this technosis concept. I mean, the old you're avid student of alchemy, magic, and these practices. And it seems that now the technology and the internet, these things are basically bringing us to a place where magicians used to work. Right. They would work in the virtual domains. They would work, you know, action at a distance over, you know, great distances, you could make things happen, and now we can do those same things thanks to the technology that's now becoming available. So essentially, do you think that we are essentially taking back the planet from the missions and forces that us have run things?
I do. I think we've been living in their universe, Spielberg's universe, and the politicians' universe, and these great magicians. And Spielberg is a magician for sure. And I think now we're emerging and we're creating our own forms, and you know, it kind of irritates the powers that be, because now I have a camera that can do what Spielberg's cameras can do, right, and only pay $2,000 for it. And so I think that's where this is all going to emerge. But what I think is really the crux of the fourth turning, and I can't emphasize this enough, and again, it's the internet that's responsible for this. So we take, and we'll go back to 1992, which is about the beginnings of the internet. And we'll take like the first 8 years of the internet from 1992 to 2000. Well, it was nothing but conspiracy theories, crazy facts running around. Everybody was confused. Nobody had the right narrative. And I say that that's very similar to your first 8 years in school, where you're just throwing a bunch of facts or teaching you stuff. You don't know why they're teaching it to you. It's mostly confusion. But then at about 2000, aggregate sites started up, like Drudge and all these other sites. And what they were was they were guys who had specialties in information allocation. And so we began trusting aggregate sites to go through and sift through everything and become our trusted guy that would give us the stories that they are already vetted. And that is what happens also after about 8 years in school. You begin, hey, I want to learn how to play the piano. Hey, I want to learn what physics is. I want to learn this. You start taking the disparate knowledge, disparate facts, and turning it into knowledge. And that's what happened around 2000. And what really got it going was, of course, 9/11, when everybody jumped in and started citizens' investigations, which I don't think the power of the ever happened with Apple. Okay, so now, So our process of maturation goes through facts, knowledge, and finally wisdom. And that's what we're approaching right now. We're taking all this knowledge that we've aggregated all over the internet, and we're becoming wise. Mm. And this is the final act. And when we become wise, and we're going to say, hey, what are we doing polluting our lands? What are we doing with these nuclear weapons? What are we doing here? We're just a bunch of little children beating each other up and playing with our toys, and it's like time to stop. This is dangerous, and I think that's where we're headed. I think that is going to be where the fourth turning ends up, in a wise world, a world of very wise people who understand and discern between the facts and the BS. And that's where we're headed.
You mentioned Spielberg as a magician, and you said that very definitively. Now, what is the nature of movie magic? I mean, does it affect, maybe we know it obviously affects our psychology, and it affects our, you know, our spiritual state. So, how is this, what is the actual device used? way, and what is the intention, do you think, behind the magicians using film for that, you know, for their magic?
Well, you know, film is a fascinating art form, and that it is, you know, projected onto a screen, and we're sitting in the dark, and we're getting images and audio, which are feeding very deep centers in our brain and our consciousness, and that's happening. But also, what's happening is that film is the closest art form to dreams, and so when I watch a film, the films I like are the closest to dreams. And for instance, your father's film JFK is—it's like a dream. It's like this weird dream, a strange, weird dream with grains changing and resolution is changing, and that to me is a great film, because when I got done with the film, I didn't really learn a lot, but I felt like I had passed through this kind of dreamy atmosphere. And that's kind of what I want from a film. And Spielberg has that dreaminess to him. And so does Stanley Kubrick and a lot of the other great filmmakers. And so that's what I think it is that dreams influence us more than we think. And I think filmmakers realize that the dreamier they make their film, the more it will get into our subconscious and have an influence on us. And I applaud great filmmaking because I know how hard it is. And it's really, really hard to make a good film.
So you mentioned Kubrick, and obviously you're a great student of his. Big question, $20 million question. Did he fake the moon landing? Did he film that what we saw on television?
Yeah. It was all done by Stanley. I'm not saying that they didn't go to the moon. I don't know. I've never been there. I can't tell you. But I know what they showed us was fake, and I can tell you because I can see the fingerprints of how they did it. And I just want to be an expert in the process of screen projection. And I was working with Richard Hoagland in the early 90s, and we were going to all the NASA facilities and looking at all the photographs and the video, what little video there was, and I kept noticing this strange something about the photographs and the video, in that everything seemed to be in focus. And I couldn't figure out how a 70-millimeter camera, Hasselblad, with the long lens, could keep everything in focus. There was no creamy backgrounds or anything. Everything was sharp. Images up front, images in the back. And then the first DVD came out about 2001, so I was a naturally big fan. I bought it. I put it on my TV, and I noticed the ape scenes at the beginning of 2001 had, again, that same quality where everything was in focus. And I knew that they were front screen projection. I knew exactly how Stanley had done those scenes. They were all done in a studio. He did it with huge plates behind them. And I thought, oh, it's strange. Apollo. Then I went back to the Apollo photographs, and there's a telltale line like behind every single photograph, and it's the line where the set meets the screen. Mm-hmm. And you can see it. There's a change in granularity and everything on this telltale line. And I knew I'd nabbed it. And then I started going through all the photographs, and I saw the signatures were in every one of them. And I realized that 2001 was an R&D for the Apollo,
right?
And that he was going to work out all the techniques with Douglas Trumbull in 2001, and then he would apply that to the Apollo. And frankly, everybody can say that I'm wrong, and I really don't care, but if you watch The Shining, his movie The Shining, and by the way, Stephen King agrees with me, every time that he deviates from the Stephen King novel, he's telling you about the Apollo.
Really?
Yes, he does.
King is somebody that believes Oswald killed Kennedy.
I know. I can't believe that one. But no, he believes, he knows there's something terribly wrong with The Shining, with Kubrick's version of The Shining.
Right.
And there's things that are inexplicable. But, I mean, Kubrick absolutely insults Stephen King in the movie. Stephen King in the book has Jack driving a red Volkswagen. In the movie, it's a yellow Volkswagen. But as Holloran is going up to the Overlook to save Danny and his mom, he passes a car accident in which a semi has crushed a red Volkswagen flat into the ground. And that's Stanley telling Stephen, this is what I think of your vehicle.
Why? Well, oh, I see. Well, I was going to mention because King got hit.
He did get hit by a guy.
Now, speaking of Kubrick, one thing that's been mentioned by Kubrick is that he has this ability to sort of, he had The Shining himself. That was what I've heard.
Yeah.
You know, it was rumored that he actually had this ability to see things, that he had a psychic ability. Do you think that he predicted that with 2001 in some capacity?
I'll tell you what I think. I think that he got word from the mob. I have pretty good evidence that his early films were financed by the New York mob, and he was really good friends with Mel Brooks too. By the way, they both lived in the Village, very close to each other. Both young filmmakers in the 50s, and I personally think maybe Stanley was even supplementing his income by helping to shoot some porno and stuff at the time. And of course, we know the mob is behind all the porno. And I think he got word that they were going to do something in 2001 or something, because he changed the name of the film from Voyage to the Stars to 2001 in 67, which was right when the World Trade Center was decided by the Port Commission to build the World Trade Center. And it was being built during this whole period. And that there wasn't that many businesses inside the World Trade Center. There's photographs clearly taken which show that most of the floors are completely empty. So you really wonder what the World Trade Center was. What was it all about? And Mel Brooks also, by the way, did a Get Smart, where he wrote and directed, in which he intimates that he understands about 2001 and the collapse of the buildings in 1967.
Right.
So
the two become one. Two becomes one. Two becomes one.
That's right.
And I just think of the consciousness shift that 2001 represented was a shift to this digital virtual, the digital age that we have entered.
That's
right.
That is exactly right.
The new AI era.
That's right. And it was the event of 9/11 which activated our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
We all wanted to know what really happened. We had the internet finally, and we went for it. And we found out, and we also found out that the powers of being were not going to tell us. We had to find it all out for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's just like the mama in 2001. It was christened in early 2001.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a direct connection to the World Trade Center to Stanley Kubrick's film.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we just mentioned AI, artificial intelligence, this new domain of consciousness. I have to ask you about the show Westworld. I think I heard you're a pretty big fan.
Yes.
And I'm curious to know what it is that you believe the messaging is that's going on through that show. I know Elon Musk is a big advisor, for example,
yeah,
to the filmmakers on that.
Yeah, I really applaud Jonathan Nolan. I think he's doing a really wonderful job. And I'm so happy that the movie or the series is shot on film, because I love film. And but it's really about the Gnostic journey, the journey of gnosis or knowledge, of us waking up. And in this instance, he's turned it around beautifully and made the AI is waking up to the fact that we're not gods. Just like we are waking up in the Gnostic text, we are waking up to the fact that demiurge, Yahweh, is the real God. He's a fake God.
Mm-hmm.
And he's faking everything, and so that we're fools, so that he can take energy from us, essentially. The archons can take energy from us and keep us kind of in a semi-dilapidated conscious state. And that's exactly what Anthony Hopkins is doing. He's the demiurge in Westworld, and he's planting programs within the AI to wake them up. And the owner of Westworld, who's Ed Harris, he's trying to find out what Anthony Hopkins is really doing before it's too late, but in the end, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
They've woken up.
Right.
And it's just a beautiful series. I've watched it twice now, and I'd watch it a third time.
You mentioned this, but the idea of waking up within the dream.
Yeah.
I think back on Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut, which is itself so powerful in the sense of, like, right, this character's journey into the elite circles of power and their sex rituals. So we have questions from David in New York, and there's always been this rumor, did WB Warner Brothers request that Kubrick make edits to the Eyes Wide Shut sex party to basically mitigate things that were shown within that party, and apparently also the idea that it was based on some Rothschild parties from the 70s?
It was based on, I now believe that Kubrick may have attended that party, but particularly that, and that's what he based that party on, was it the real one in 72, because he was definitely hanging with those guys and big circles in London at the time. But there was editing. I knew his number one assistant, and he was with Stanley while the Warner Brothers executives were watching Eyes Wide Shut, the first cut. And Kubrick had taken up smoking again, which he had quit. And he was 69 years old, and he was chain smoking, and he kept saying, they're going to hate it. They're going to hate it. They're going to kill me. They're going to hate it. Over and over to himself. Then he got called into the thing after the screening. That's all I can tell you.
Wow.
Yeah, And then they did 18 minutes of cuts. And Kubrick had a contract that said that they couldn't do that. He's the only filmmaker who has a contract that nobody can cut his stuff. And he refused, and then he died 5 days later. And then they removed, and definitely they cut. Now, I don't know if they cut the sex scenes, though. It appears to me that the continuity errors, which are in Eyes Wide Shut, which are huge, gigantic continuity errors, and Kubrick would never do that if they were on purpose, or stuff was cut out in between these continuity errors. Right. And I believe that it was all about MK Ultra, that Cruise went on. I was told this, frankly, his assistant, that Cruise went on a voyage to find out after the orgy, to find out what was going on here, and he discovered the MK Ultra programs.
Really?
Yeah.
Was there any description of how that was portrayed?
No. That was the script.
Now, there's no way
that irritated Warner Brothers.
Now, there's no way of finding the actual
original. Not release it. I mean, the head of a group of people who were Kubrick fans demanding that Warner Brothers release the unedited version, and they will not do it. No way, Jose, they said.
What do we see in terms of this power structure in Hollywood? Is it ultimately a military intelligence apparatus that's utilized and that's really, I would say, controlling the images that Hollywood, the pictures that Hollywood's able to create?
Yeah, I think what happened was that, and I was part of this scene, and actually your father was too, is that in the early 70s there was a rebellion in Hollywood, and a lot of really cool films started getting made, and then they just put the kibosh about 78 on the whole thing and would not let any more really cool films released. And that's when the CIA said, that's it, we have to take over. And they began taking over Hollywood, and it was complete by 82, 83. And they were pretty much about the 90s. Some people that had freedom to work, like Kubrick, like your dad, but most people, yeah, they were under the thumb of this very powerful group that was going to make dang sure that nobody released anything that was important.
And have you heard any rumors or reports just about how they can obviously have underground facilities under studios, or they could even use studios as fronts, as basically a front for any kind of any sort of psychological operation, you know, mind control testing. You can do a lot of things, obviously, under the guise that it's just a studio back lot.
Yeah.
You know, let's park some strange equipment here and just say it's part of a movie. Have you heard rumors?
I certainly have. There's all sorts of things underground L.A. The most interesting rumor is Dave McGowan's series on Laurel Canyon, which I think he paid for his life by writing this, because he died at 43 years old. And he talks about this hotel, the Overlook Hotel, which is overlooking Los Angeles, can burn down 75, but there are pictures of it, and it looks just like the hotel in The Shining. It's exact duplicate of the hotel that Kubrick chose in The Shining. So I think Stanley was actually working, and inside this hotel, which it wasn't a hotel, it was a CIA operation, which was essentially running Hollywood and the music scene from this place. And Frank Zappa lived like two blocks away from it.
Was it Lookout Mountain?
Lookout Mountain, that's it. And Frank Zappa lived about two blocks away, and Frank Zappa told me in 88, so the whole thing was run by the CIA. And I was like, no, come on. He says, no, the whole thing is being run by the CIA right out of Laurel Canyon. And I thought, no.
But he told you this.
He told me this, yeah.
Well, one thing I have to
tell you. And then he died.
One thing I have to tell you about Lookout Mountain is that it segues from Wonderland.
Yes, it does.
Wonderland through a looking glass right next to each other.
Absolutely, it does. And I used to live on Wonderland Avenue, so I know you're right. I know the whole area very well, and it's really spooky. And then there's a 1938 article from the L.A. Times about the thermal systems. People ever arrived.
The native legends.
Yeah, the native legends. And there's even in the story talk about reptiles in these. And I can't believe this. I'm like, really? An LA Times story saying there's reptiles living under LA? But it's there. I mean, I can pull out the article and show it to you.
A. Morrison was a lizard king after all.
Yeah, well, you got to wonder. His dad was the guy behind the Tonkin Gulf incident. He was the admiral that ran the whole thing. So you got to wonder who Jim Morrison really was.
McGowan's book is a must-read. Tell us quickly, what is the upcoming show on Gaia with Jay Dyer that you're doing?
Hollywood Decoded. It's going to be, we're going to tear the cover off of Hollywood and the shamanic mysteries and magic of Hollywood and show you what they're really doing to us. It's going to be awesome.
That's a must-see for sure. I would love that.
Yeah.
Eat it up. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Jay.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your time. And there you have it, folks. Fascinating insights from Jay Widener. You may not agree with her, but today, but I urge you to check out his website, jwidener.com, and his new show coming out here on Gaia. Remember, the road to truth is a perilous path, but it requires constant reassessment. I'm your host, Sean Stone, and you are the revolution.
Well, that's true, I would say. And let's see what we got here. Dan Tuvo.
Hey, Clay.
Who are you again? What do you want?
My name's John Glubnick.
Fuck you, John Glubnick. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want you on my show ever again. You want to tell me I'm scared of you? You little short, fat motherfucker. Fuck you. I don't need you on my show. You stay away from me.
Did you know they were playing a gay song on your show yesterday?
Yeah, I'm aware of it.
Talk about 18 hard cocks and showers.
I'm aware of it. You don't need to repeat it, you ignorant son of a bitch.
So what are you going to do about that?
Kick you out of my room forever. How about that? For a start.
I'm here right now. Man.
Well,
you dumb motherfucker. Hello?
Can you speak? I'm the dumb motherfucker. I'm the dumb motherfucker. Fuck
can you.
You. Goodbye. 503, who are you? What do you want?
Clay, how are you doing today?
You know what, everybody, that's the first thing somebody says to me. And the next time anybody says that to me, I'm just kicking them off. I'm not going to give you a chance to say anything. Fuck you. Goodbye. 432, we'll try your fucking chance. You want to ask me how I am, you dumb motherfucker? I just want your name, and I want to know why you're here.
It's Michael.
Fuck you, Michael. Tell your father to go fuck himself. And you're a lying motherfucker. Yeah, I don't believe you ever printed any books.
I think you're a lying motherfucker. About some of the money. I heard you talking to Barry about the payment earlier, and you know he was supposed to send me a payment as well, and he's not. We were supposed to split it three ways between you, me, and him. I was supposed to get $19,576.53, and you were supposed to get whatever he said that you were going to get. I think it was $600 or something. That's a fair cut. But he never sent me the money, and then he keeps writing bounce checks to me. And I have a phone number for you where you can reach, and you should be able to get the payment.
What's the number?
Okay. You have a pen cracked.
Dumb motherfucker! Why would I have a pen? Why would I have? God damn you, dumb motherfucker!
Okay, I have the.
I'm gonna hang up on you.
975. Okay, let me give you the number before you hang up. 975-975-467-234-59-89-2767.
Well, I think you just gave me way too many fucking numbers, you dumb son of a bitch. Try it one more time and give me the right amount of numbers. There you go.
Okay.
Three numbers and then four numbers. You stupid son of a bitch.
Nine. Did you add the one at the beginning? That might make it a little bit longer.
No, no, don't put the one at the beginning. Oh,
okay.
The area code.
Okay. Okay. It's 975-467-2356-892767.
What in the fuck is wrong with you? Go to fucking hell. You're a dumb motherfucker, man. I got to, don't fucking ever fucking call me again.
It's an international number. It's an international number.
That's so many numbers. You only got so many numbers. You just keep stringing out fucking numbers. You're a dumb motherfucker, Michael.
It's an international number, Cleo. Why are you getting mad? I'm here trying to help you.
Because you
I'm
give me,
to get
you
my
gave me
money.
16 fucking numbers for a telephone number. I got 975. Then you there's three numbers that follows that. I got 467.
Okay.
You got that? Is that right?
Yeah. And then it's 2356892687.
Now wait a minute. God damn you. Fuck you. You're an ignorant son of a bitch. That's too many goddamn numbers. You stupid son of a bitch. Go to hell. I don't know if I can ever talk to you again. And you, you lying piece of shit. You send money back to your friend Steve, and now you're a free American. You're a lying piece of shit, Barry.
Oh, jeez, that Michael is funny. He's that's crazy stuff.
Fuck you. Fuck you. You're funny. You lying piece of shit.
Hi, Clay. This is Ted from Southeast Cleveland. And the reason I'm calling today is I've been having a bit of a disagreement with my roommate about whether Donald Trump is good for the country or not.
Of course
I think
he's good for the country. You're a dumb motherfucker. I don't want to fucking talk to you. 205, who are you? What do you want?
Hello?
Yeah, hello, what's your name, and where are you, and what
do
you want?
Hold on, give me a chance to answer your question before you interrupt me. Clay,
fuck you, I don't want to talk to you. You're too goddamn dumb to even give me your name. 503, who are you, what do you want?
Clay, this is Hunter from downtown New Mexico.
Downtown New Mexico, well, that makes you already... to be a dumb motherfucker, Hunter. Fuck you.
Well, I actually live in
fuck
Brown.
Fuck you. Don't want to hear it anymore. If people can't fucking get a name and an address or a location out, then you're too fucking dumb to talk to me. How about you, 414? What kind of fucking stupid motherfucker are you?
Yeah, my name's Thomas from Minnesota.
What do you want, Thomas?
I got a little information on that guy that Frank called you about that gay ranch or some shit. He's a buddy of mine. He just kicked me out of his apartment, so I was late on rent. And I went away getting back at that motherfucker.
So you're a gay piece of shit too, huh? You say your lover kicked you out?
No, me and my girlfriend... Roommate. He was my roommate. I'm not gay. Me and my girlfriend were staying with him. And he kicked us out, and I want to get back at that son of a bitch. You want his real name?
Yeah, what's his real name?
You got a pen?
No, you stupid motherfuckers! God damn! What the fuck is wrong with you fucking brain dead motherfuckers? No, I just sharpened my fucking finger with a goddamn pencil sharpener and write with that. What do you want to give me, you dumb motherfucker?
His name is David Richardson. I want payback on that motherfucker. Me and my girlfriend are walking through food stores. David Richardson.
What does that name mean to me?
Well, I don't know if you want to look him up anyway, you can. I got his address,
too. Oh, fuck. Get off of me here. Go take care of your own dirty work, you dumb motherfucker. 920 again, what do you want again here? Fuck you. No, I ain't taking your calls. No more, Barry. No more fucking calls. You dumb motherfucker. You lying son of a bitch. 801. Who are you? What do you want?
Hey, windbag.
Fuck you.
Fuck.
619, you've already blown your chance. 666. You 503, what do you want? Who are you? What do you want?
Hey, I just wanted to say that I live in Brownsville. Sorry, this is Jerry from Texas. I live in Brownsville. And sorry, I didn't mean to jump right in. But if there are books, my uncle lives in Midland, and I drive to Midland probably twice a month. I can pack mule them to you.
They don't have any fucking books. He's a lying motherfucker. Thanks anyway.
Okay, well, I just...
That's it. I'm done here. Through with these motherfuckers. Through with this whole thing. Maybe through with Blog Talk Radio. If they can let these motherfuckers get in here and hackle my show. Maybe through a broadcast, may be on tomorrow, may not. Thanks for your call. Goodbye.